Let's talk about the feminization of our institutions. You're incredibly concerned about the great feminization's impact on the legal profession, in particular, the rule of law. Why?
Because I think that the feminization of the law will tend to make our grown-up legal system look more and more like the Title IX courts that we had for sexual assault on college campuses, which removed due process protections because who was going to benefit from them? Men. And they were probably all rapists anyway, so who cares? Mm. And then some of the court cases that arose out of the Me Too movement also violated some really important due process protections. I think there were huge flaws in the Harvey Weinstein New York court case, which is why the New York Court of Appeals later overturned that conviction, because mm-hmm. there were so many problems with that court case and so many instances of due process that were violated. It was as if we all decided that Harvey Weinstein was a bad guy, therefore he needed to be in jail regardless of what the actual legal outcome, whether the prosecution proved their case or not. Mm-hmm. And this is the area of the essay that I've gotten the most pushback on. I say that, even the liberal lady lawyers that I know have the utmost respect for the rule of law. And that's true. And, of course, there are lots of really great, capable female lawyers. But my response would be this. If you are looking for examples of female lawyers saying clearly for the record, I don't care what the law says, I'm going to follow my feelings, you will be unlikely to find examples of that happening, even in cases where that is transparently clearly what's going on. The example I would offer is Sarah Koenig, who is the Serial lady, the Serial podcast mm-hmm. lady. Mm-hmm. When Adnan Syed's murder conviction was overturned, briefly, it's back now, but when it was overturned, it was on procedural grounds. The women who were working so hard on his behalf to exonerate him found some failures of the prosecution to disclose certain items of evidence, and it was on that basis that his conviction was briefly overturned. So if you asked those lawyers who brought that motion to exonerate Syed what they were doing, they would have said, we are adhering to the rule of law. But I listened to the Serial podcast, and it is very clear to me that it is not out of concern for the rule of law that the true crime podcast listening middle-aged women of America convinced themselves that this poor guy was actually innocent, even though all of the evidence in the case pointed in his direction. It really was emotional. It was, and you can hear Sarah Koenig say this on the Serial podcast. She says, I don't think he did it because he seems like a nice guy. He doesn't seem like a psychopath. I've seen him show emotion toward me. Come on, lady. And of all the various corruptions of the rule of law, coddling violent criminals would have to be the one that poses the greatest threat to, your listeners, to you and me living here in Washington, D.C. It's a huge problem.
Right.
People being unwilling to enforce the rule of law on people who are threats to public safety. Right. So
it's just a denialism that is very apparent in that
podcast.
That's right. I don't want to believe that this person that I had a normal conversation with could murder me violently. Because what does that mean for your safety? Whether you're a man or a woman, but particularly if you're a woman, mm-hmm. what does that mean for your public safety if this guy that you can have a pleasant conversation with over the phone from jail could murder you?
Although, let me throw a twist in this story. Sarah Koenig's stepfather, who I think married her mother when she was 10 or 11 years old, so who raised her, was also a famous writer, mm-hmm. Peter Matheson, whose work may be known to some listeners. He's very famous, very, very accomplished writer, very good guy. But he did the same thing. He was the most passionate advocate for Leonard Peltier, the Native American activist who was pardoned sort of wrongly, I think, by Joe Biden. On like his last week in office.
That guy.
Who shot an FBI agent point blank in the head. But he came to Peter Matheson with some sob story saying, oh, it wasn't me. I was there, but I didn't shoot him. And Peter
Matheson. That's Helen Andrews. Helen Andrews. You can find that on X as well. We'll be right back with more. Stay with us, folks. It's War Room Live, AlexJonesLive.com.
crashing from FEMA Region 6 in occupied North America.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Alex Jones is back. The info war continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. The Henry Novak case continues to dominate headlines, good, as it should. J.D. Vance has even come out with a lengthy response to the, you know, revelation of the body cam footage and so much more. I think he's exactly right. And this is the type of thing that stops me from totally throwing J.D. Vance, like, under the bus. I know a lot of people, you know about the path he took to get to where he is, and are very suspicious about it. I am too. His connections with Peter Thiel, his changing his name so much. But then he comes out with something like this, and it's like, thank God we have J.D. Vance in the halls of power. We need somebody like this, somebody saying the obvious, right? J.D. Vance says this: Henry Novak died the same way a civilization dies, abandoned, handcuffed by authorities who neither trusted nor cared for him, and accused of hate crimes he did not commit. His murder is as tragic as it is enraging. He should still be alive today, and he would be if the last few generations of European elites had stood their ground against the politics of self-hatred and the mass invasion of migrants, many of whom despise the West and the people who love it. Henry was far from the first to so needlessly lose his life, and I fear he won't be the last. Each time a life like his is lost, the proper response, the only response, is righteous anger. One of the most important things the Trump administration has proven to the world is that stopping the flow of mass migration and defending national sovereignty is a matter of political will and leadership. Anything else is an excuse. It's because we love the West that we want to preserve it. We love our civilization, we love our country, we love our children, and nobody should ever die the way that Henry Novak died. May God comfort those who loved him, and may God rest his soul. So again, I think this is an amazing thing for the Vice President of the United States to acknowledge and to write and to hopefully operate off of. Hopefully this isn't just a rhetorical flourish. Hopefully it's backed up by genuine belief and ideology and political action to undergird it. The thing is, and this is what I find myself often explaining and trying to get across, but put simply, we have a system that is made for people in good faith, people who, on their own volition and without being forced to, will do the right thing because they know that it benefits everybody to behave that way. That system is beautiful, it's good, it's positive, it is the outcome of thousands of years of trial and error and war and bloodshed. And the West, as people put it, aka Christendom, aka Europe and the European diaspora, aka white people, created a system as better than anyone has ever existed, that, you know, any other system that's ever existed in the world. The problem is, it's vulnerable. It can be taken advantage of. So to preserve this system, you have to ruthlessly guard it. It's not that complicated. And there's people get confused, I think, because inside the system, we have these vulnerabilities. We have this ability for people to sort of, you know, use it as they will and, you know, adhere to it or not as they want. I mean, we're a little loosey-goosey with that. But that's for people in our system. That's for us. That's for people within our system. And we talk about this all the time. Like, you can't write laws to deal with every instance of every event. It's not possible. It's why we have courtrooms. It's why we have lawyers to make these arguments, why we have juries to make these decisions, because you can't mathematically determine the outcome of absolutely everything, despite the globalist, you know, desire to have us all operate like, you know, chips on a computer board. That's not how the world is. So laws are written, but there's some interpretation required, and there's some leniency provided in some cases, and, you know, more strictness in others. But at the end of the day, it's a human endeavor that we're engaged in. And so in order to maintain this system of vulnerability, you have to ruthlessly guard it. It's not that common. It's why Camp of the Saints is named Camp of the Saints. If you've heard about this book, it's made a big resurgence recently. And it's a good book, and sort of terrifying how sort of accurately it portrayed the modern world. But essentially, it's a fantasy. It's a dystopian novel that was written decades ago. And it was looking into a future where basically boatloads of people from the third world start arriving in Europe. And the whole beginning of the book explains the name Camp of the Saints, that basically it's like Europe is a walled garden, and that, or a camp of saints, right? With no wall, with no defense, but with beauty and vulnerability and precious people, precious items, but extremely vulnerable to attack from the outside. The Camp of the Saints is describing Europe. It's another name for Europe. And you could call it the Garden of the Saints, right? Or the walled garden of Europe. And you have to protect it, because if you don't, it's extremely easy to take advantage of. One of the main examples of this was revealed recently, where it was revealed that a bunch of immigration NGOs in Britain were training the immigrants to say that they were gay so that they wouldn't be deported back to their country that executes gay people. These people would come along with their families and children and claim to be gay and persecuted because they're gay. So, yeah, personally, because, you know, I don't even necessarily think that's, but it's sort of like the ultimate example of our system. And whether you think it's an appropriate thing or not, that is the type of stuff that white people do, that Westerners do, that Christians do, that Europeans do, that they say, look, we understand, we, even if we don't agree with it, we understand that you have this immutable characteristic you were born with, and it's wrong for people to punish you. And if your country is going to punish you for that, then we will protect you from that. It's kind of a beautiful thing. And I know some people, it's like a lot of people are just like, no, that's just us being idiots. Maybe. But I think like the value of our system is that we do make allowances for, you know, people that don't fit in to their prescribed position. Yeah, 1973 is when Camp of the Saints came out. And again, people think it's like we have this system that is very liberal, very loosey-goosey, and we don't treat people very harshly most of the time. At least, you know, theoretically we shouldn't, which is good. But then you do have to treat people harshly who are on the outside of the system. They're trying to break the system. They're trying to destroy the system. You can only maintain a system of vulnerabilities if you ruthlessly punish taking advantage of those vulnerabilities. Really not that complicated, okay? If you want to have a system of asylum, you have to ruthlessly punish anybody that tries to claim asylum but doesn't deserve it. It's the only way to continue to have an asylum system. The only way you can have just any system that's not, you know, mechanized and mechanical and technological, where you're, you know, everything is just sort of a calculation. If you have any sort of human nuance in it, you have to ruthlessly protect it against anybody who will exploit it. And that's not being mean to those people. That's being nice to the people that enjoy the system. It's upholding the system that's so wonderful. You have to be ruthless and brutal for anybody that tries to destroy that system. Again, I don't know how hard it is for people to understand this. Let's go to clip number 7 here. This is a young man at the Henry Novak protest in the UK. He gets it, obviously. And it's just yet another example of yet another random British person who you just think, how many of these people can this island produce? How many people who are just so intelligent, so thoughtful, such good people at their heart. You know, it's like we had Frank Wright on the other day, and when that video went viral, I retweeted it just saying they're just geniuses walking around out there. They're just absolute geniuses walking around, and their genius is not being put to use to better the society. They're not the ones in charge of things so that things work well. They're deliberately excluded from everything because of who they are, because of their skin color. So as bad as it is in America, with half of our jobs since 2004 going overseas to, you know, half of Central and South America living here and collecting welfare. In Britain, for every one British person hired, 27 foreigners have gotten jobs. So they are being just deliberately and very rapidly excluded from their own society. And, you know, it's not going to kill them in a generation, but it'll take two or three. But yeah, you know, you can't find a job. It's hard to, you know, get a wife and have kids if you can't support yourself, can't afford to go out on dates. Certainly, even if you get married, it's hard to have the confidence of having a kid if you're like barely keeping your head above water as it is. And so it's like families that would otherwise, if the father had gotten gainfully employed immediately after school, they would have had five kids. Maybe they have two instead of five. And then maybe those two kids, you only have one at the end. And then within two or three generations, it's just over completely. It's not a typical genocide. It's not a Gaza-style genocide where they're dropping bombs on people or shooting them when they come to get food. It is a more subtle but almost more effective form of genocide where they just make it that much more inconvenient to exist, that much more difficult to grow, that much more difficult to save money, that much more difficult to maintain the land that your forefathers fought and died for and cultivated in the first place. Just a little bit more difficult generation after generation, and before you know it, you look around and your country's gone. So I'm glad to see people in Europe, you know, starting to stand up and speak out against this. But there's almost this bittersweet thing when you see these videos of these great, just genius UK people, and you just go, these are the people that should be running the country, that in the past would have been running the country, which is why Britain became how great it was. And still is to a certain degree. But now they're all just being excluded deliberately because of who they are and because they're smart, because they're capable, because they're nationalistic, because they can see through the lies. That's why they're kept out, because they're not playing along with the game. They're not willing to sell out their own people, and they're not willing to, you know, bend the knee to whatever international power demands it. So we gotta wake up and seize control again once and for all. Let's go to clip number 7 here. This is a young man at the Henry Novak protest. Let's watch.
What motivated you to attend this protest today for Henry Novak?
So I'm 17, which means that most of us who are young know that we have years ahead of us, or at least we're arrogant in that respect because we believe we're in a safe country. So having seen someone who's 18 years of age, his last words probably being the rights being read out to him by the police, there's very small thing. There are very big things that would have to make me cry, but seeing that footage really did.
What does Henry Novak's death mean to you personally? Why is it important?
Well, it's important because it represents the two-tier policing system that we have. That Sikh family knew what to say to the police. They knew what to prompt to the police in order for them not to be investigated for the slashes in his back, which meant that we currently live in a migration system where we have generations of migrants who shouldn't be here but have been here and learn how to trick the system.
What specific concerns or questions do you feel have been adequately addressed or not adequately addressed by the government at present?
So besides from the investigation of the actual officers who committed the arrest and why they did it, and the lack of sufficient training that they probably received, especially surrounding the circumstances of an allegation of racism, mm-hmm. followed up with someone, you know, being hurt. Mm-hmm. The fact that we had the body cam footage released, I was surprised about. The fact that we do have some of them even resigning before making statements of what happened was a good thing. It's not that what people did in response wasn't a good thing. It was that the system is already set against us.
What changes or actions are you hoping will result from this protest, which is now actually a march?
We have a wider discussion on re-migration, a wider discussion of the actual long-term impacts of mass migration. Because so far it's confined to talking about the 1% of radical Islamists or, you know, sort of radical terrorists. Now it can be broadened up to migrants and, for example, their ceremonial daggers they may have. The fact that there are generations of migrants, despite the fact that some of them, quite rightfully, should have stayed in this country. Most of them shouldn't.
Now, it's a fact that the perpetrator of this crime was Sikh, and he was actually obsessed with knives. He had many knives at home. But the actual murder weapon, which has been released in a picture by Southampton Crown Court, by the Crown Prosecution Service, wasn't actually a kirpan. How significant do you actually think it is that he was a Sikh, or do you think it was just a tragic accident that could have happened to anyone?
Look, so from my understanding, it was used, but the weapon actually killed him was a significantly large dagger. Now, symbolically, if we have equality under the law, unless everyone in every tribe of people is allowed a knife, there isn't an exclusive one group that should have it. Now, his obsession of knives could have spun from the fact he had it on him constantly, and it was taught from at birth to be a good thing, a defensive thing, because Sikhs are always taught that their religion is incredibly pious because it came out of the 15th century in a defence against radical Islamism. So, because we've been sold this narrative that the Sikhs are incredibly peaceful people and that the Sikhs only use it in a defensive capacity,
of course he could have, but would you not say on the broad majority of the cases that they do use it defensively? Is this not an edge case?
Well, it's like if we had the Second Amendment exclusively for one ethnic group of people or one religious group of people. I don't even think people who are pro-Second Amendment in America would say it's only for European settlers who settled in their country because they fought for the rights. So if we have a right to bear arms, if we have a right to knives, it shouldn't be exclusive to one group of people, because then it causes the negative impact of course, putting a group up on the pedestal, then causing this unnecessary criticism of these groups of people. If everyone had a knife, the Sikhs wouldn't have been critiqued as a community. It would have just been this one lad.
And lastly, what would you like people who are not at this protest, which is now actually turned into a march if you look behind us, what would you like people to understand about why this issue matters?
It matters because people only care until it actually happens. And when it happens, it's devastating. The Henry Novak family only cared about issues, you know, surrounding their own personal safety after the boy's been stabbed. People in Southampton only care about the effects of mass migration or the effects of having a bladed article until it happens to them. So realise about long-term impacts. Cheers, man.
So again, just, you know, extremely well said. Obviously, you know, the youth get it. I am a little bit, you know, different than this. This is the video I'm looking for. You know, it's interesting. He says, you know, you shouldn't have one group of people able to arm themselves, and he uses the Second Amendment as an example. You wouldn't have, you know, just Europeans in America having guns. But why not? But why not is the question. Young Bob is this young man's name. Young Bob RB on X. Very well-spoken man. Oh, he's pretty popular. Okay. Hope Not Hate. Oh, arguably the best known of the batch. Okay. I was like, wait, he's not a part of Hope Not Hate. No, he's targeted by Hope Not Hate. Yes, that makes a lot more sense. A lot more sense. I'm going to have to follow him. Young Bob RB. Very powerful stuff. But I always do think it's funny to make the suggestion that black people shouldn't be allowed to have guns. I think that's funny, because what is the argument against it? What is the argument? How do you argue against that without undercutting the entire anti-gun argument, where you go, well, if you take guns away from black people, they'll be helpless, they'll be defenseless. It's like, okay, so you want to take guns away from everybody? How does that make any sense? It doesn't make any sense. It's, if you think this is such a good thing, then wouldn't it be a good thing if at least a part of the portion, you know, a portion of the population had to adhere to it? Wouldn't that be a positive thing? Abortion would be another one, right? Can we have abortions for black people only? Would that be acceptable? No? Well, why not? I thought abortions were great and good. Because it'd be racist against white people, denying them abortions. Don't they deserve it? I mean, white people, they're bad, right? They've done bad things in the past. We should punish them by not letting them get access to abortion. But the irony is that in the UK, that's exactly how it is. Literally, there are not just Muslim patrols that are allowed to run around with weapons. There's the Jewish group Shamrin that is a fake police force. They're wear police uniforms and carry around guns and drive police cars around, but they're not the police. They're a Jewish private militia. They're allowed to carry guns. Like in Australia, the Jewish militia is allowed to carry guns. Nobody else is. This is a crazy video out of the UK. Driftwood at Buck97552 on X wrote, "When armband wearing Muslim Sharia patrols are riding through Manchester streets on horseback while DEI indoctrinated police stand there watching, paralyzed with fear and indecision, something has gone badly wrong. A government that can tax, regulate, and monitor every aspect of your life, yet is unable to enforce its authority on the street, is exhibiting hallmarks of anarcho-tyranny. The moment people lose faith that the law is applied equally to all, the state's legitimacy starts to erode. Britain has arrived at a very dangerous place." Let's watch this video. These are the Muslim Sharia patrols wearing armbands and patrolling Manchester on horseback. Let's watch.
"Apparently, they're allowed to chase people with horses."
And there's the police standing there. The lady police.
"They just chased someone with an horse."
Yeah, it's fine.
"They just chase people with horses."
Yeah, that's great.
"Are they part of Greater Manchester Police? How come they're not being nicked for chasing them people with horses then? They've just been chasing people with horses, officer." "These be chasing people horses."
Yeah, so again, Sharia patrols. And we've seen it. Remember, we saw the video last week. Young woman in the UK sitting on a bench waiting for a train when two Muslim men wearing high-vis vests, looking like the police, but they're not police, walk up and start telling her that she has to leave because she's not dressed appropriately or whatever it is. And she's sitting there filming them going, "Who are you?" And they're going, "Don't worry about who we are. You have to leave now." They're just random dudes wearing high-vis vests. This is what they're allowed to do in the UK. They have sovereignty. You don't. That's how it works. There was a Muslim dude who was fighting police at the airport, broke the police officer's nose. Woman police officer punched her in the face, broke her nose. He got totally released. No charges whatsoever. Meanwhile, a 21-year-old boy is going to be sentenced to 3 to 5 years in prison for throwing a traffic cone in the direction of police. This is from Russia Garbage Human on X. 21-year-old son pleads guilty to throwing traffic cone at police. The cone didn't even hit the police. It's the same judge that oversaw the Southport riot, you know, free speech imprisonments. It was all done via telelink. 3 to 5 years sentencing guidelines, immediately remanded to custody. Justice, in quotes, in 72 hours because he isn't brown, Muslim, or a lefty. If only he broke a policewoman's nose instead or raped a working class English girl, then he wouldn't be sent to prison for 3 years. 21-year-old son pleads guilty to throwing cone in the direction of police. This is by the mother, saying, "Just sat in Portsmouth Magistrate Court and watched my son plead guilty to throwing a traffic cone, which was caught on camera from the disturbance at Southampton on Tuesday over two-tiered policing and the poor boy's death at the hands of the police. I don't condone violence towards the police, but my son is only 21 and got caught up in the moment. He informs me he didn't even hit them, just threw it towards them. Firstly, it was a kangaroo court. The solicitor informed me before entry that it would be in the District Crown Court judge that oversaw the Southport rioters court case, presiding with what appeared on a big screen once my son came up from the cells, took his guilty plea, and then informed him by video link. With it being such a high-profile case, his guilty plea with the sentencing guidelines somewhere between 3 to 5 years for guilty. With that said, he's remanding him in custody, and he'll be sentenced Sunday morning at Southampton."
I don't sell crap. Bovine colostrum. Then I'll get back to news. I didn't do any plug in the first hour. And Bigly, about a year ago, puts out a survey. A lot of you that are, you know, if you're a VIP, you get surveys. And, you know, once a month or something, they'll ask, hey, what are you wanting? Or what are you liking best? Or what products would you like? And that's smart to ask customers that, right? And you're kind and you tell us. And it came back. Bovine colostrum was in the top two or three every time. And so was high-grade beef tallow, which we now have for you as you requested. And it's a great seller. Not rocket scientist to ask your customers what they want. That's the number one rule of sales. Well, have a great product and find out what your customer wants. And you can say the customer's always right. I think there's something better I'm going to tell you, but I'm not going to argue with it. But that's an important rule of sale, but I don't think it's the most ethical point. I'll actually tell you what I think I need to know. We got samples of it in before we even private labeled it from a top place to say, hey, you got to try this. Well, and now I'm taking it because I know how good it is. I'm like, okay, the survey wants bovine colostrum, the first milk of 2 weeks out of a mammal. I know it supercharges the immune system. I know it has all these immunity factors that goes in. It's like the natural vaccine. I know it's great. I know that you go back to Germany hundreds of years ago in the UK and even out west here in the US, they had a sickly kid or a preemie. They would give them the colostrum. They would call it the first milk of a donkey. It was like, it's like always in all the literature, like the medical doctors, like that's the, oh my God, donkey. Donkey colostrum is like, whoa, man. I mean, like that, or donkey. And then horse is good. Goats are good, but it's always donkey's the best. It says, you know, the first 2 weeks milk, the colostrum of a genie. That's in medical books from Germany, the UK, the US. That's how powerful colostrum is. Well, we don't have big, you know, creameries and dairies with a bunch of female donkeys. So you're going to have to settle with the cow. But it's good. And so they send in the canister of the company we're going to private label it from. And I'm like, okay. And so I throw it in the back of my car with some other stuff. And a couple days later, I go to have dinner at my parents. And I go, hey, my mom takes, I've seen her take colostrum and stuff. You know, women like their hair and their nails and all that. I'll give her this. So I go in and give her a couple canisters of it and everything. And then about 2 months later, my mom is like, Alex, I want some more of that. That is incredible.
Several weeks later.
Mom, you got to listen. The products are amazing.
Well, this one, like I said, I don't do testimonials. There's a lot of good products, but this is the first one that I can go, whoa, it's in a back problem that I've had since Alex was born. Is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turned darker.
And darker.
So now she gets it from us. She orders it from us. But that just gives you an example of I'm not selling crap, okay? I'm not going to sell you something that doesn't work. Now, with colostrum, it's going to take, you're going to feel it right away in a few days, but it's going to take, you know, months for you to see it with the skin and the hair and the nails and all that for it to really kick in. But I'm telling you, you are nuts if you don't go to the alexjonesstore.com and get these right now. Just go get it. And then we can expand and have our legal battles and beat the New World Order, and you'll be as happy as a pig in poop. And there's a bunch of sales on all the best-selling products right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I can't be bought. I am simply funded by you if you like the work we're doing.
Nice try, globalist. But Alex Jones is still here, and he's not leaving. Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
We assure you this mystery is all but unsolvable. No witnesses, no murder weapon, the whole place wiped clean.
Unsolvable! Ha! In fact, I've already worked out who's done it.
But we've only been here 28 seconds.
Oh, my dear Watson. Did you notice the tiny indent in the floor? Its shape and size indicates it could only have been made by a loose shoelace cap that had been stepped on. Specifically, cap model number 31882B, which only comes with the laces of the work boots issued as part of the standard uniforms at the local meatpacking plant, which the local butcher was a former employee of. The very same butcher who can't tie his shoes on account of his fingertips being gone. Motive? He harbored hatred against the store owner, part of a rival family in his home country, Italy.
Ah, it was me. Blast, you've done.
Elementary, indeed.
Now, how do we solve this one? There was no one about and no weapon here either.
Ha! Oh, dear Watson, you haven't noticed, have you?
What?
Look up. Do you see the light glass casing around the lantern?
Of course.
You see the victim's scream reverberated off the brick and up the lamp, causing it to shimmy ever so slightly against its casing. By noting which etchings are most fresh, correcting for standard noise levels through the day, and the effect photons would have on the reverberation, I can work out a formula that would allow me to construct a perfect image of who the sound waves bounced off of that night.
Incredible!
Oh, it was me. Blast, you've done it.
All right, we're impressed. But we've got one more case for you, Sherlock.
We found a 15-year-old girl with her head cut off. It appears some kind of grooming gang kidnapped her and forced her into slavery before murdering her. People near the scene of the crime heard them scream Allahu Akbar when the incident occurred.
I mean, that could have been anybody. Anybody could have done that.
Hmm, there must be clues. What did you say he screamed?
Allahu Akbar. It's Arabic for...
Yeah, man, that's crazy, but, I mean, you know, white people speak Arabic, too. Like, a blonde white guy could also yell that, you know?
I didn't mention his skin color.
Look, I'm just saying, there's no information or motive here or anything. We're just going to drive ourselves crazy trying to figure it out. So, you know, a big part of mystery solving is just knowing when to quit.
Why not interview people from his community?
What community? It could have literally been anyone, you know? It could have been a Norwegian social worker who was on vacation here, you know? Like, we just don't know.
You know what? Maybe we're just going to search her for DNA.
Why do you think some people are genetically prone to this kind of thing?
No, it could help us solve the crime.
I mean, maybe it's not a crime. Maybe it could just be someone's culture, you know? Shh, quiet! Someone four blocks away is typing hate speech about this on their keyboard! Got him! Looks like we found the real criminal after all.
You're under arrest.
People learn through story, and entertainment media is the most powerful way of shaping people's values that's ever existed. And it's totally dominated by the left. And they've been using it for decades to chip away at your country with their propaganda. That's why we're fighting back by making a full-length animated show called Twisted Plots. It delivers a right-wing message through jokes and story. We've got a week left and it's time for our final push. To help get us fully funded and watch our full-length pilot episode, go to twistedplots.com. We've got the track record, the team, and the experience. Give us your support and we'll be unstoppable.
All right, that's the great Freedom Tunes on X at freedom_tunes. twistedplots.com. You can go there to contribute to their fundraising for their new show, which I think is a very valuable weapon system in the information war, using humor to expose the reality of what's going on. And again, it's not easy to make something like this funny, because it's not funny, because it's horrifying, brutal. And again, myself and frankly the whole crew were too engrossed in this story. We totally didn't even realize we'd gone to commercial break, so I'm not even sure where this got cut off. But again, just imagine being the mother of a 21-year-old son who, despite all the headwinds against you, despite all of the difficulties that the average white UK British person faces, from the relentless demonization of them to the fact that, you know, 27 foreigners get jobs before a single British person. Imagine being a mother who, through all of the chaos and headwinds, raise your son to where he is a productive, employed 21-year-old, and knowing that he may be about to be sent to prison for the next 5 years of his life because he threw a traffic cone in the general direction of police. He didn't hurt anybody. He didn't threaten to hurt anybody. He merely expressed outrage at the fact that the local police had handcuffed a dying 18-year-old, and they're now sending him to jail for 3 to 5 years for pleading guilty, for not fighting it, for saying, look, I did it. I was there. I got caught up in the moment. I threw a cone. It didn't hurt anybody, but yeah, I was angry. I threw a cone. I threw a traffic cone in the direction of police. I did do that. They go, okay, well, 5 years then, 5 years in prison, 5 years. You know, I don't know if there's a chance at this point, but like, this is the type of thing that, like, I don't think you are morally obligated to comply with that. I actually think you have a moral right to resist this with everything you've got, because this isn't fair. This isn't justice. This isn't the appropriate activity of a legitimate government proceeding. This is a racialized gulag system. A 21-year-old who's never been in trouble with the cops, never even hinted at, you know, criminal activity, who's gainfully employed, and who throws a traffic cone, doesn't hurt anybody, maybe going to jail for 5 years. When people who locked little girls in dog cages get 2 years. I think you have a moral right to, like, resist with violence and just go, I'm not going to prison. You have no right to throw me to prison for this. Cries his eyes out in court. Yeah, I bet he did. A protester who threw a traffic cone at police during demonstrations in Southampton following the murder of Henry Novak has refused to enter the court because he was crying his eyes out. Now, this is a different kid. Connor Bishop, 24, was hauled into Southampton's magistrate court after he was caught on video hurling the objects at retreating police officers. However, he then refused to leave his cell and enter the courtroom because he was sobbing and was left to his lawyer to enter his guilty plea to violent disorder on his behalf. Elsewhere, two other men appeared at Portsmouth magistrate court. Noah Etherington, 18, pled guilty to violent disorder by throwing a brick towards police officers, while Reese Robinson, 21, admitted the same offense after he threw objects at police. All three men are accused of taking part in violent demonstrations that rocked Southampton on Tuesday evening after Vikram Digwa, 23, was jailed on Monday. Describing Bishop's offense, prosecutor Kevin Lucy told Southampton Magistrates Court Mr. Bishop attended the planned protest at 6 p.m. on June 2nd. At first, he didn't seem to be getting involved, but effectively he has seen later clips where he does become involved. So yeah, 24-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a 21-year-old are going to have their lives destroyed for daring to be outraged at the police for basically killing an 18-year-old kid. Like, this is what I said. I don't know, man. Y'all are not taking this seriously enough. You really aren't. And this is one of those kids, you know, sometimes I feel like a hypocrite, right? When it's like, you see things happening in places like Ireland, and I'm like, the Irish need to stand up against this. But, like, this doesn't happen to us. This doesn't happen here. It wouldn't happen here. And if they tried, I don't know how it would go. But that's crazy. But that's what I said. It's like, listen, if you're in the UK, if you're going to go to any protest as a white guy, as a young white guy, if you're going to a protest, wear a mask. This is what I mean when I talk. It's like white people haven't accepted that we're not in charge anymore. Because we're not, for all intents and purposes. Like, people have this idea that it's like, it's our country, you know, we're just going to go and make demands, and it's our country after all, and we're the ones who have to live with this, and we're the ones who get to say how things are here. And so they go and just act like they're the ones in charge still. You're not. You are a hated minority now. You are a underground resistance. You just aren't acting like it, which is why it's not working. I literally said that. You know, during these riots, going, look, either if you're going to turn a protest into a riot, that riot has to, like, have goals and has to, like, do something. Like, you have to, like, take over a building and be like, we're not leaving until you guarantee we will not be prosecuted. Like, that's what it's going to take. Or you need to be masked and you need to take steps to conceal your identity, because it doesn't matter if you get away that day. They're going to use facial recognition. They're going to use biometrics. They're going to find out who you are, and they're going to throw you in prison for years, even if you didn't do anything wrong. You've got to accept that. You've got to understand that now. Like I said, you, every white guy in the UK right now, if you are not a total globalist cuck selling out your country or a police officer in the force, but I repeat myself, then you are a member of a active military resistance network. You just aren't acting like it. You're acting as if you're still in charge. It is genuinely crazy. It's like if the French Resistance was just going out and holding protest against Nazis. You think that would work? You think the Nazis would put up with that? You are the resistance now. You are the underground. You are European Hezbollah. Whether you act like it or not, that's how you're going to be treated. So you might as well start acting like Hezbollah, right? Like, you might as well start acting like the French Resistance, because that's how they see you. I swear to God, it's like they don't realize that. Did you not see what happened at the Southport riots last year? It was the exact same thing. It was the exact same thing. So I'm not blaming these. You know, obviously, this is horrifying. They took his guilty plea and then informed him by video that, with it being such a high-profile case, that his guilty plea, the sentencing guideline, were between 3 and 5 years for a guilty plea. With that, he said he's remanding him in custody and he will be sentenced Monday morning at Southampton Crown Court at 1000 in front of, at 10, I guess, in front of him personally. Now take him away. If that's not two-tier justice, I don't know what is. And that's a young 21-year-old white boy, full-time job, never been in trouble, and dealt with that swiftly. He throws a cone at nobody. 2 days later, he's in jail, awaiting whether to find out he'll be 24 or 26 when he gets out. 5 years of a young man's life stolen because he decided to be a little bit outraged at what the police... Meanwhile, the police absolutely brutalized people who had done absolutely nothing. This is from Reform Party Group. Just sat in Portsmouth Magistrate Court and watched my son plead guilty for throwing a traffic cone, which was caught on camera. So this is the one that we just read. I'm still in shock. I don't know. I mean, you shouldn't be. You shouldn't be in shock. You should know this by now, to be honest with you. They really do. I mean, it really is like, well, you know, my son was a member of the French Resistance and he was out there protesting against the Nazis and the Nazi court is throwing him in jail. I'm shocked. They're sending him to a concentration camp. What? It's like, yeah, he's a member of the French Resistance under Nazi-occupied France. What do you think is going to happen when he gets caught? What do you think is going to happen if you give them any excuse to punish you? And it's a high-profile case, of course. You know what that means. We like to refer to this as the doctrine of severity. The point is the absurdity. The point of doing this is to teach everybody we're crazy. We don't abide by logic. We don't abide by consistency. It doesn't matter if you didn't do anything or not. If you even are close to have been doing something, then we will destroy your life. It doesn't matter if you're a great person. It doesn't matter if you have a legitimate grievance. It doesn't matter if you didn't hurt anybody. If you oppose us, we will destroy you. That is the lesson being sent here. That is the message being sent. It is a doctrine of severity. And they're happy to destroy the lives of productive young men in pursuit of this. Meanwhile, we go to clip number 13 here. This is a 50-year-old father of three, a man who is a veteran, served his country, and was simply standing off to the side watching events unfold in Southampton when he was set upon by a bunch of hyper-violent thugs from the hive of wokery that purports to be a police force. Vile and disgusting. It's clear, Hampshire, that you have a culture of callous cruelty. These disgusting thugs should be in cells right now, next to their cruel, heartless colleagues who handcuffed Henry and watched him die. You have no right to call yourself the police. You are despicable tyrants. Let's go to clip number 30 here, where this 50-year-old man who, and actually gets worse, but I'll tell you about who this guy really is in a second. But this is the way the police treated, random UK citizens who didn't throw cones. They didn't throw rocks. He was literally just standing there when the police did this to him. Let's watch. They grab this guy, bash him with the shield, bash him more with the shield. 5-6 guys here piling on top of him. Then they start kneeing him in the head. They're pinning him down and just kneeing him over and over. That was three massive knee hits. Now, this is the other video, right? So this is the full video. This should be clip number 16. Oh no, yeah, this is them beating him and people commenting. But that angle that we just saw, that second angle with the guy saying they're beating that geezer and they're about to kill him, it actually shows the full event, because people on the left were suggesting that this was out of context and the guy had thrown a brick and so the police were arresting him correctly. But here it is. So he's right there. You can see him in the red hat, in the black hat, and he's sitting, start moving forward. That's it. And that's where the police start hitting him. He just remains sitting on the brick wall there, and there they start attacking him. So you can see in the video, he'd been sitting there for about 30 minutes. He had not moved. He was not a part of the crowd that was antagonizing the police. He was sitting off to the side on a brick wall. By the way, the man is injured. I suppose I assume he was injured, during his military service, but he's a veteran and he has three pins in his ankles. And he basically told him afterwards, he was like, I can't move that fast. I was sitting on this brick wall. You suddenly demand we move. And then before I know it, I'm being hit in the face with a shield and dragged to the ground. That's the way the police treated the protesters. But if you dare to throw a traffic cone in their general direction, you go to jail for 5 years. You can be doing absolutely nothing. They can slam you in the face with a shield, tackle you to the ground, knee you in the back of the head 4 or 5 times. Because how dare you not move the instant that they say they want you to, even if you are, you know, crippled and have a physical ailment. But like this is the condition of the British police. They don't go after the Muslim guys on horseback. That's scary. No, they go after the crippled veteran who wasn't doing anything wrong, and it takes 6 of them to bring him down. Should we play the grasshopper scene from Bug's Life right now? Because that's what we're dealing with. Only, at least in the Bug's Life, the grasshoppers were impressive. At least in the Bug's Life, the grasshoppers were physically imposing and capable of extreme violence. The British police are just pathetic cucks, only capable of wielding violence against old crippled men, terrified of even, you know, negatively addressing Muslim people. Meanwhile, so scared of a 21-year-old throwing a traffic cone that they want to send him to jail for 5 years. I think you guys should rise up. I think actually the solution to this is violent revolution. I'm pretty sure. I don't know. I'll have to check my sources. But I'm pretty sure the more I look at the UK, the more I realize we should be running guns to them. We should literally be dropping paratroopers onto the UK to forcibly overthrow the UK. They need regime change is what they need. They need America to deliver democracy to them. They need ethnic cleansing of the foreigners in their country. That's actually what they need. Until you understand that to a sufficient degree, it's going to be Groundhog's Day. Now, I pulled in 2 different videos, guys. You can let me know when we have that, because obviously America is also not immune from the things that are happening. Yeah, disabled veteran, father of 3, Matt Styler, charged with attacking Southampton police, remanded in custody after pleading not guilty. Prosecutor Nola Bond, in essence, it is part of the riots following the murder of Henry Nowak. The defendant was seen sitting on a wall. So they charged him. They charged him with attacking police when they literally attacked him. And again, they don't, you know, I mean, just imagine. Just really imagine what it'd be like. Like, just imagine what you've done over the last 5 years. Imagine every Thanksgiving, every Christmas, every holiday, every birthday, every conversation you've had with a member of your family over the last 5 years. Just imagine all of that being stolen from you. Imagine being a little kid whose dad stolen from them for 5 years because they were sitting on a wall when police decided they deserved a shield in the face. Now, meanwhile, while white people are literally imprisoned for nothing in the UK, let's go to clip number 3 here. This is on patrol with London's Shamrim. This is the capital's Jewish Community Protection Volunteer Group. So this is the armed Jewish militia that portrays themselves as police, but aren't actually police. Sky News went on a ride along with Shamrim as they responded to calls on the street, stepping in to defuse confrontations. I bet you didn't realize how out of control and rampant anti-Semitism is. They spend 1 hour with Shamrim, and apparently there's all these confrontations happening. They're apparently very busy. Let's watch. Vile anti-Semitism on patrol with Jewish volunteers.
With anti-Semitism surging, we're scrambling to a call for help.
A lady, she's been locked in and victim of anti-Semitic abuse, and she's extremely anxious.
These men are not police officers, but North West London volunteers with the Jewish community support group, Shomrim, the Hebrew word for guards. We arrive to find 2 versions of events. The husband of the Jewish woman has dashed to the scene, afraid for the safety of his wife and young child, He wouldn't speak on camera, scared of what he called an anti-Semitic mob, but told us his wife was taunted about a recent arson attack on Jewish ambulances. Two men and a woman say they weren't blocking her in, but had broken down. They denied making anti-Semitic comments, but seemed annoyed by one of the Jewish men who allegedly referred to Shomrim as our police, though this is disputed.
All right, hold on. Let's pause it. All right, the first act of anti-Semitism. What? And so someone calls and is like, there's an anti-Semitic mob. My wife is in danger. They were making comments about an arson. This is so crazy. The anti-Semitic arson that they're talking about didn't even exist. Oh my God. It's like layers of this. So there was the stabbing on Golders Green of the crazy Muslim guy who stabbed a Muslim person and two Jewish people. Then following that, there were like two or three examples of fires occurring near temples, near synagogues. And so these were reported as anti-Semitic arson attacks against synagogues. They weren't arson, they weren't attacks, and they weren't synagogues being burned. So here, I guess a Jewish guy calls the Jewish guards because he says somebody is making a comment about the arson attacks that didn't actually exist. And when they get there, the people are like, what are you talking about? Our car broke down. And the Jewish people there are saying they're blocking us in with their car. They're threatening us. Please come quick, Jewish guards. And the Jewish guards show up and the people are like, what? Our car broke down. We didn't say anything to these people. Okay, let's go back to the horrifying, harrowing, you know, anti-Semitism patrol from the UK. Let's watch.
Ultimately, is diffused, and the Jewish woman manages to drive off.
Oh, thank goodness!
The reason why she called was because
she survived.
He said, "You Jews think that you could do whatever you want,
true,
and that's why your ambulances were burnt down." I just want to see if the car's still stuck.
So we're just going back actually to see whether the broken down car has now moved or not. It's about 6 minutes since we pulled away. Let's see.
Magic. The car's gone to the side. Now, who's saying the truth? That may be quite telling.
Wait, so the car was still there?
What you're saying is because the car is gone 6 minutes later.
He didn't say it was gone. He said it was been pulled to the side.
Was being deliberately parked there to block that woman in and intimidate her.
100%. And with vile anti-Semitic comments.
Volunteer Ben Grosnas is a luxury furniture salesman. Avi Ball works in online sales, but was one of the first on the scene at a double stabbing a few months ago. As we drive round Golders Green, it's clear how nervous people are. Just a few hours before we went on patrol with Shomrim, a major fire saw them inundated with calls.
Literally just people worried, obviously speculating if it is or isn't.
My God, it's literally just responding to their paranoid fears about nothing. We're going to continue this on the other side. These are the Jewish patrols that are given license by the British government.
At midnight, Alex Jones was thrown out and locked out of his InfoWars studio along with his crew after the 8-year-long legal battle trying to shut him down and censor him is coming to a close. And liberal media are celebrating with headlines like this. The lights go out at Alex Jones InfoWars, and InfoWars.com, the domain name, now has a message that just says off air. But these people don't know anything about Alex Jones because if you just go to alexjoneslive.com, the website looks very similar to the old InfoWars website. And look at there! There is a live feed of his show, the Alex Jones Show, now just not using the InfoWars name, where he is continuing and hasn't missed a beat. If you go to the Apple App Store and the Android App Store and search for AJN Live, you can download the new Alex Jones Live app where you can still listen to his show streamed live on your phone. Or you can just find and follow Alex Jones on Twitter X, where he still has 4.5 million followers because despite the lawyer's attempts to try to take his personal account, they failed. And you can see there the live icon around his profile photo shows that he is live streaming the show there on repeat 24/7.
There is a war raging for the future of humanity.
We have opened a new front at alexjoneslive.com. They thought they could silence us. They thought they could drive us off the air. They failed. We are back, stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the feeds. Hear the broadcast. Share the signal. AlexJonesLive.com. The coordinates of freedom.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.